So if I could just kind of get everybody caught up with what's going on and where we are. We started in January, February, preaching through the Gospel of John, having an awesome time in the Gospel of John. We came to John chapter 6, and we found that John chapter 6 was full of complaining. People were murmuring against Jesus. How can he say these things? How can he possibly have the audacity to heal a man who's been lame for 38 years on the Sabbath? What is he thinking? That's the wrong day for this. So they complain, and he says, I'm working with my Father. Then they just get really mad. He's got to die. He says, God is his Father. He's making himself God. And then it goes further and further, and there's more murmuring, and there's more complaining, and people actually start leaving. And it gets down to the very last 12, and Jesus is saying, so guys, are you going to leave too? Are you gone now? And just the thing that kept popping out to us out of that chapter was, it's just that a heart of murmuring, a heart of complaining, keeps us from receiving God's best for us. If we're discontent with the situation or what we have, it keeps us unable to see all that he has for us. And if we're complaining and grumbling about where we are and what's going on, it keeps us from trusting him for the next step. And that's what we always talk about here, is what's the next step of faith. And so that kind of became this catapult for something entirely different, of just the Thanksgiving no complaining challenge. We decided, okay, let's take this as an opportunity to take a whole bunch of steps of faith. So a few Sundays ago, we introduced some of these purple bracelets. And if you haven't been around, the way it worked was we were going to try to see if we could go 14 consecutive days without complaining. To which some people said, 14 days. But the goal of the whole thing was, is if you complained, you had to move the bracelet to the other arm and you had to start all over again. And let me tell you, that's just brutal. So this day, on day 5, I'm like, yes, halfway point's just right there. Dad, that was complaining. That's why God gives you kids, to tell you you're complaining. Thank you, my dear precious son, for wanting me to be more like Jesus and for pointing out that I'm complaining right now. Off to the other wrist it goes, and as you can tell, it's back here again because I made it to day 3 and I complain again. I blame it. I'm trying. I'm just telling you, I'm struggling with this. So that's why we have till Thanksgiving, because it takes a long time to string 14. So if you're just thinking, really, this complainer is going to open the Word to us? I'm just confessing right off the bat, I'm not that good at this. But also the goal was to just strike up conversations, to talk to people about this. And I've had lots of conversation. I've carried bracelets in my pocket with me and given them away to people. And everyone says, that sounds impossible. I don't think I could do that. So then I don't feel so bad because everybody thinks it's hard. But the goal is not just to not complain. The goal is to see that in the moment we can give thanks, or we can just be content, or we can just be quiet. That's always an option. Not say anything. Which leads us to a couple of the big questions that have been asked, which is going to lead us into this passage in Philippians today. The very first Sunday, someone asked the question, what if I'm just complaining on the inside? Right? And some people, I've heard this more than once, I'm kind of an inward complainer. I don't voice my complaints a whole lot. What if I'm just inside complaining? And that first Sunday, I was like, well, that's interesting. Does that necessitate the changing of the bracelet? If it does, I think I'm in bigger trouble than I thought I was, right? So then you start realizing, man, there's a whole lot more going on. And then, so we're gonna look at that one today. That's going to be a little bit what we're going to talk about. The other question is going to be next week. We're going to be the last week. Somebody said, how many weeks are you going to preach on this? And I was going to say, well, I'm going to preach on it until everybody does it, right? It's kind of like we're going to keep passing the offering plate till we get how much we want, right? That kind of thing. We're just going to do this until that last poor soul gets to day 14. We're waiting for you, man. So it might be me. Who knows? But no, we're going to do the next week, and then we'll keep talking about it, and I'll keep encouraging, and we'll get back to the Gospel of John. But just this has been an interesting thing. People have asked me, and since, why did you wait this long? What does it really mean to complain? And so just right out of the dictionary, thought this might be helpful. to express dissatisfaction, pain, uneasiness, censure, resentment, or grief, to find fault, to tell of one's pains, ailments, etc., to make a formal accusation. So now you're reading that and you're going, now wait a minute. Yeah, I'm off the hook. No, are there times when complaining is okay? Is it always complaining? So that's going to be a little more next week. And because we've asked the question, this has been one of my qualifiers is, am I complaining to somebody who can do anything about it? That's a doozy right there, right? I have a friend who is a server at Cheesecake Factory, and it's like, what is your problem bringing me this food that's not cooked the way I like it, as if he cooked it? Right? You see what I'm saying? So then I've really had to have this different mindset. Okay, am I talking to somebody who can do that? But what are we allowed to express grief? Are we allowed to express pain or okay, resentment? That's maybe not so good. So next week we'll talk about when is the right time to complain and to whom, right? There's a different dictionary. This is Webster's, for those of you who've known Webster's. To express grief, pain, or discontent, right? So you can see there's kind of a spectrum there where it's like, okay, I can expressing grief, that's fine, right? How do I express it? A lot of it is in kind of how to make a formal accusation or charge, right? So that's like you go to the store and you formally tell somebody, hey, this product is defective, or I'm reporting, or however that works. And so it's just a formal thing, right? But if you still don't get it, Webster's gives a long list of synonyms, which I think are beautiful. And I would just encourage you guys to just adopt some of these. Beef, bellyache, bleak, carp, caterwaul. I had an uncle who used to use the word caterwaul, only he used it when like somebody was singing very loudly and very badly. He called that caterwauling. So crab, croak, fuss, gripe, grouse, growl, grumble, grump, holler, inveigh, kick. My mom grew up in a holler, so it must be different where I come from. She grew up back in the hills, bear holler, back in Tennessee, so there must be a different kind of holler. Inveigh, kick, moan, murmur, mutter, nag, scream, squawk. Take that one home with you. Quit your squawking. I like that. Squeal, wail, whimper, whine, yammer, and yelp, which I'd never heard before. But I think that's a good one to take home. Are you yelping? Are you yelping at me? So just thought that might be a little helpful. But getting back down now to Philippians, just something jumps out at me about this passage, about the depth of our problem and the width of the impact of our problem. Is complaining just an external problem? And does it make any difference? It's just me and my complaining and maybe the people in my immediate circle who have to listen to it. Does it make any difference? And if you're anything like me, you've come to the conclusion, man, my heart needs some help. This is down in there worse than I thought it was. And then you realize as you talk to more and more people and you get on social media where I think people complain, right? So, if you know a little bit of the background of this book, Paul is on this missionary journey, and he wants to go this way, and the Spirit says no, and he wants to go this way, the Spirit says no, and then he has this dream, and someone said, hey, come over here, and he ends up in Philippi, and he's there teaching. This is brand new ground for the church, and he goes down to the river, and these ladies are down there, and he leads one of these women to Christ, and she's like, well, why don't you come to my house, and it's kind of like the Philippian church kind of starts there in this lady's home. And he's there for a while, and then he casts a demon out of this little girl, and they get mad because they've been making money off of this girl with the demon. And he ends up in prison, and if you remember, they end up singing in prison. And he gets out, and later on he's back in prison. And when he's back in prison, he writes a letter to the Philippians that's got all kinds of like joy and thankfulness and don't complain in it. And you're going, Paul, shouldn't you be yammer, yopping, nagging, screaming, and squawking? I'll get that off because you guys are going to sit there and look at that. But here's what happened. When Paul was in prison, some other people came along, and And they were saying, oh, wow, look at that, the guy who started your church, Paul, he's in prison. What kind of guy is this? Really? You didn't vet this guy very well, did you? And they're kind of poking fun and making fun, and Paul's just like, hey, get on my case all you want, just keep preaching the gospel. As long as the gospel's preached, fine. So there's this pressure coming on from the outside, just about Paul and about the work there and about the church there that he had started. So there's that kind of external pressure. But then we see that in the church in Philippi, there's some internal things happening. There's some disunity. Apparently there's some grumbling. There's some complaining. And it's bringing disunity to the church. As a matter of fact, if you were to flip forward to chapter 4, Paul actually names some people. And he says, you need to tell these people they need to get along, right? Which is an amazing thing. What if those people were alive and came today and flipped through and said, well, looky there, we made the Bible. Wow, how about that? We go down in history as these two people who. So anyway, so there's this kind of this internal thing that's going on. And let's start at verse 12. 12 and 13 of Philippians chapter 2, 12 and 13. When I first started following Jesus, these were some of the first two verses I memorized, and they've just been so precious in my life. I would just love to preach them, but just kind of by way of introduction. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but even much more in my absence. So he's saying, when I was there with you, you guys were just amazing examples of obedience, and I left, and you've just picked it up a notch. And he just tells them, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. I'm not there. I'm not doing this for you. You work out your own salvation. And so, in other words, this isn't work for your salvation. Keep working so you can be saved. This is you have been saved. Now let's take this to completion. Let's move towards the goal of Christ-likeness and fixing our eyes on him and walking with him and following him and living the lives of disciples. You work that out, and with fear and trembling, this is a holy task, and you know your own weakness and abilities and your own tendencies towards sin. So just keep working. Keep moving in this direction. It's your own salvation. No one can do it for you, but just keep walking and working. But then verse 13 starts with four. For it is God who works in you both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Oh my goodness, I just love to say that all day. But just why keep working it out? Why the fear and trembling? Because that's God at work in you. That's God at work in you, giving you new desires and giving you the ability to follow those desires to his glory. So when you see yourself loving things and wanting things that you didn't used to want or love before, you realize God is giving you the desires that you didn't have, and he's putting those there. He's working those into you, and not just the desire, but the power to carry that out. So we have this incredible balance that you often hear. Okay, so following Christ, becoming more like Christ, sanctification we got. Whose responsibility is that? Is that my doing, or is that God's doing? And the answer these verses give is yes. You're exactly right. It is. Jerry Bridges writes about these verses, you are completely responsible while being completely dependent, which is a beautiful thing to think about. You are completely responsible. Work out your salvation, but just remember, you are absolutely dependent upon God to give you the desires and the power to work this out. If he doesn't work in you, your working out is to no avail. So it's a both and sort of thing. Now, what is that going to look like? That's the big question. So as God is working in you, is desiring to do his good pleasure, what's that going to look like? Verse 14, here we go. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. Here we go. Do all things without complaining or grumbling. So it's almost as if here we have the outward and the inward. As a matter of fact, almost every Bible translation I look at has a It's complaining, grumbling is generally the first word, but it's that second word that are different. Some of you say questioning, and you're like, wait a minute, what's wrong with questioning? Shouldn't we be willing to ask questions? But it's kind of this inward disposition where there's kind of a bit of cynicism where you go into a situation and you're already doubting the other person, you're already thinking disunity in your head. You're already got something against them. You're already doubting and questioning other people. And out of that comes the outward complaining. And he's just like, do everything without those two things. Which, man, I'm telling you, I tried this week. I looked at the Greek. And it still says all things. You know, I tried to get it to say most things, some things, a lot of things. That would be nice. I can do a lot of things. And he's like, just everything. There's no need to bring complaining or grumbling or dissension in to anything, which is kind of the flip side of when Paul says later, do all things with thanks, right? You can enter into the situation without already kind of having in your mind, oh, this is a situation I can enter into, you know, with something to complain about, right? It's the old saying, if you see yourself as a hammer, then everyone's a nail, right? You've heard that saying, right? That's kind of the get rid of that disposition. So do everything without that. So we've been on that for a while. Just let that be there. But then verse 15 begins with the word that. And that means there's a reason for this. There's a reason why we should not be a grumbling, complaining, disputing people. That you may be blameless and innocent, blameless and pure, children of God, without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. So what's he saying? If you grumble, if you complain, it makes you dingy. It lowers the wattage on your light. You are children of God, and you are to live without blemish in the midst of this twisted, crooked, dark world. And he says the family likeness, if you're a child of God, what is he saying? He's saying the family likeness should be that you're just not walking around grumbling and that you're able to have unity with each other. That's the family likeness, right? It's not, they'll know you're my disciples by the way you complain. No, they'll know your disciples by the way you love, by the way you tend towards unity, right? And if you think about this, how amazing this must have been for them to receive this, because Paul didn't go into Philippi and find, you know, 10 churches, right, one on every corner, right? This is a brand new thing. This is a brand new thing, and everybody's, who are these Christians? Who are these little Christ? Who are these Christ followers? Who is this Paul? What is this church? What's going on? So you're looking at a people who are already competing with what's going on over there. And so if the world looks on and says, oh, that's what's going on over there, it's people who can't get along because they're grumbling and complaining so much, he says, you're not going to stand out very much in this dark, twisted, crooked world. You're just going to blend in. And that's not the family trait. The family trait is that you're blameless, not that you're perfect. Often say blameless means you run for office and they start digging, right? Just don't run for office is what I always say, but whatever. Right, they're doing the background checks, talking to your friends, calling your references. That strikes me because I was thinking this week, that's blameless is this. I mean, there's lots of ways to be blameless. Isn't it fascinating that this is it? Because, oh, blameless, we've got a top five list of no-nos, right? Well, we certainly don't do those five things, right? And we certainly don't put complaining on the thing that makes us feel the blame, right? I mean, imagine someone coming in here and you're looking for a pastor, right? It's the very first interview and you're asking no questions. They just walk in, hi, we're so-and-so, good to meet you. Well, here's what we're going to do. Here's this bracelet. We want you to put this on. We're going to meet with you in 2 weeks. You just tell us how many days you go in a row without complaining, and we'll tell you if we want to hire you or not, right? Of course not. I don't guess. I don't know. I don't know what you're thinking. But anyway, it's fascinating to me that we have in our minds what the biggies are, that make you not blameless. And just the word innocent, pure, this is a picture of children who are bright, shining lights like stars in a night sky. And he says, you're just going to look dingy and dirty. The world needs a church. Philippi needs a church that's unified, not grumbling, not complaining. And then, so when I said, it's deeper and it's wider than we thought. This is what I meant. The problem of complaining goes deeper into my heart than I thought it did. Because my lack of thanksgiving, we'll even put it that way, my lack of contentment, as Joey put it a couple of weeks ago, my lack of belief in the goodness of God all the time, right, goes deeper into my heart than I thought. So, it's God who works in me. Okay, God needs to work more deeply than I thought, but it's broader because it's about the testimony of the children of God in a world that is crooked and twisted. And then he comes right back around in verse 16, and he gives, maybe your translation even says, by holding fast, or holding fast, and which means as you hold fast to the word of life. So that's kind of, again, going back to the means of doing this. How are you going to become shining lights in the world? How are you going to bear the family resemblance to the children of God there in this brand new thing in Philippi? How are you going to do this? All things without grumbling and complaining. You're going to hold fast to the word of life, and that's the way God's going to work in you to desire to do it of his good pleasure. The word of life. Do you remember Jesus said this when we were just in John 6? The flesh profits nothing. The flesh does nothing. The spirit gives life. And then he says, the words I speak to you are spirit and life. Whoa, Jesus. So what you can do on your own, it's not going to get you anywhere. But my words are spirit. My words are life. And so then when he comes later and looks at the disciples, you guys going to leave? And Peter speaks for everyone. He uses the word we. Where are we going to go? You've got what? The words of life. So the words of life are in me. I'm holding fast to them. And some of yours may even say holding forth. So I'm holding on to them and then I'm showing them. I'm holding fast. The word of life is getting in there and it's desiring and doing and it's changing me on the inside and it's making me more thankful. It's making me more prone towards unity, making me less prone to suspicion and taking sides and all of that. And he just finishes up this little paragraph. So that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. Just two very intense words, running, laboring. In other words, when I'm among you and even from a distance, I'm still laboring, I'm still running. Verse 17, even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I'm glad and rejoice with you all, and likewise, you also should be glad and rejoice in me. In other words, if all this work I did among you, if all that happens is it just devolves into grumbling, complaining, disunity, and the whole thing just dissolves, if that's all that happens, I will have spent a whole lot of time in vain. But if it turns that you are pouring out your lives by faith, you're offering your lives as a sacrifice, and I'm just part of that. I'm just like the drink offering on top. I'm pouring out my life as you pour out your life, then I'll rejoice. I'll rejoice. And you guys can rejoice too. I'm in prison. I may die here, he says. I don't know if I'm going to live or die. Whatever. I'm pouring my life out for you, and I'm not going to complain about it. I'm not going to grumble about it. I'm going to let these guys have their way. I'm just going to keep pouring out my life for you. You guys keep pouring out your life for Jesus, and we'll just all be happy together. We'll all be glad together. We will not let ourselves be pulled down to just being dingy in a dark world. So, it's deeper than we thought. It's broader than we thought. I'm sure you discovered that by now as you've moved your bracelet around. Some of you may not have moved your bracelet. Some of you may have the very first Sunday said, pfft. And you're probably, goodness, this would have been your 14th day today. Congratulations if that's you. Anybody make it? That's what I thought. Not because I doubt you, because this is harder than I thought. Yeah, so it's just in there, right? And so imagine a world where there's such a thing as social media, where information gets out so quickly and then you can respond, right, immediately. And we don't even need to know everything before we start complaining. I mean, in the world today, we can be ahead of the ball game. We can be complaining like 5 minutes after the event. Like, we can jump right on that thing, and we can insult, and we can mock, and we can scorn, and we can make fun of people, and we complain about stuff. I mean, man, we can be cutting edge in being dingy, right? Because they will know you are Christians by just how you vote and who you complain about and who's messing up the planet and who's taking this whole thing down the toilet and just all that stuff, right? That's how you'll know you're Christians, by your complaining, right? Just, I'm telling you, this does not make it any easier when you can just like, Tartan and I were talking the other day, and he was like, man, so often I think that when the Bible speaks about the tongue, that if Paul were alive today, he would put "and the keyboard," right? It's like, man, it's just like, there it is. How did that happen so quickly? I couldn't have even spoken it that fast, right? And you just see the church, you see believers just joining in the fray, not standing out at all, just sounding like the world, and so we don't stand out. And you just ask yourself the question, what if in the coming week and in the coming weeks, I just used every opportunity to give thanks and speak of the goodness of God and to express contentment, or to just, even in the middle of a difficult situation, just say, hey, I still know God is good. I still trust Him. And imagine even more, here we are, this is weird to say, the Philippians did not have Philippians. Well, they did. They didn't know it was Philippians at the time, but they had the word of the apostle, but they certainly didn't have the go eat popcorn that's with it, right? Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, they didn't have all that. They didn't have the whole thing. They didn't have as much word of life as we have, and so here we are, so much more advantaged, so much more to cling to, hold on to, and let get inside of you and let get inside of me. So the 14-day challenge to not complain is just as much as a 14-day challenge of, hey, how deeply will the word get into your soul? How deeply will the word change your desires? Because let's just be real for just a minute. Complaining feels good. Does it not? Don't you just kind of, almost like the endorphins just kick in when you're just getting it out, right? I mean, oh, I told you guys we started this at the bad time, but that first round of the playoffs, baseball, oh my goodness. I mean, my favorite team finished last. They were out of the playoffs sometime back in May, right? So I've got the whole year to complain. And then the playoffs start, and I realize there's all these guys in the playoffs who used to be on my favorite last place team. Who's running this show, right? Hire me. I can GM better than that, right? And I'm off and running. Day one of no complaint challenge, I'm shot down, right? All because baseball, right? Why did we start this now? January, that would have been good. right? But let's just think about it. You get in there and it just feels nice. It's like a rush to just jump in and grumble. And there's always a reason for it. I've never met a situation. I told you last week, baseball and driving. Oh, my goodness. Why do I have to drive with this purple? Twice I've changed this. No, excuse me. As of this weekend, three times I've changed it while driving the car. Yes. So the other times were like maybe watching baseball. I'm trying to even, oh, you're going to be really ashamed of me now. I'm just going to go ahead and confess all out. I complained in one of God's favorite places. I complained in Chick-fil-A. I had Jesus chicken right in front of me. And Joey, will you write us a song about that, please? Yeah. And my son just looks at me and is like, wow, Dad, listen to you complaining in the Chick-fil-A. Time to move that bracelet. I'm like, you don't even have on a bracelet. Ah, move it again. Anyway, I'm just saying, you realize the problem goes deep when you desire it so much and it feels so good, and you realize, man, God, you're going to have to be gracious at a deeper level than I ever even thought. And he's like, I won't do that. I'll do that. I'll work down to the level of your desire. Right down to the level of that endorphin rush of complaining. I'll work down deep down in there. So, why don't we just take a moment and just pray with each other, think about this for a bit, and take this to the Lord. Lord, just not about complaining, but just about our hearts in general. I have no doubt that there are people in this room right now who have come to a place where they've thought that they've got problems that are deeper than you can take care of. They've got issues, they've got addictions, they've got stuff they've been carrying since they were kids, they've got guilt, they've got shame. And yeah, they've got a lack of gratitude and a lack of trust. Lord, it's not that hard to just look up and ask, how did I get to a place where the problem is this deep, and how am I ever going to change? And we trace it down, and we find at the very bottom of it all, there's these desires and these pleasures and these desires that maybe we've been carrying for just a really long time. And here comes this powerful, powerful good news. God will work into me down to the level of my will and my desires. Give me new pleasures. God, I pray that you will just take this into our hearts with a new hope, a new sense of maybe my heart's not as impossible as I thought it was. And Lord, I pray for my dear precious brothers and sisters here today that you would just give us an amazing amount of grace to just stop. Just stop when the thoughts are going crazy. To pause and think about you, and preach to ourselves, and talk to our own soul with your word. Hold fast to the word of life in those moments that seem to just overtake us. Give us grace to pause. Think about what we're thinking about. And may your word, Lord, you said, Jesus, when you were comforting the disciples that you were leaving, you said you would send the Spirit. And you said that one of the jobs, one of the ministries of the Holy Spirit would be that he would remind your disciples of everything you told them. And Lord, I know that's an amazing thing when we think about what your disciples gave us and how the Spirit reminded your disciples of what you told them. But even today, your Spirit, thank you, plays such an important role in our hearts as he just, in that moment of pause, reminds us, hey, remember this. Remember this. And so I pray that your grace, the grace of your Spirit in us, would just be reminding us, hey, here's this, and that our desires would change as he reminds us of your word. Lord, I pray that we would be bright and shining lights in this world, that we would be difference as we pause before we type, we pause before we think, and we just take the moment to either just not say anything and just give thanks where we are, or to just speak a word of hope, a word of faith. God, this is broader than we think it is. This is a bigger stage than we think sometimes, and I pray, God, that we would just realize we're on it. And I pray to God that we would just be found faithful children, no matter how big the stage. Lord, just walking in your desires and in your power. And Lord, as we see, the world sees our light shining, may our Father in heaven be glorified. In the name of Jesus Christ we pray. Amen.
You've been listening to Sunday Morning at Creekside Church in Spring, Texas. We're glad you joined us. For more information, please check out our website at www.mycreeksidechurch.org.